This is Scott Becker with the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I am thrilled to have back with us one of my favorite guests, Michael Kinyele. Michael had served at the VA for a long time. Now he's independent, working on some really interesting healthcare consulting and other ideas and investing and so forth. Just a really interesting and good guy. Michael, can you take a moment to introduce yourself?
Sure thing. Thanks, Scott. Great to be back. Just recently wrapped up my time at the VA as the Chief Innovation Officer, and during that time, we had the opportunity to establish VA's version of CMMI that was established as part of the Mission Act of 2018. I really think about that as an opportunity for the VA to continue to innovate, particularly around the things that are currently restricted by law or regulation, because part of that effort really allows the VA to think about new approaches to care and payment, and then submit a waiver request to Congress and ultimately have that signed into law by the president. While that sounds very complex, it is. My team is able to kind of go through the process and put out implementing regulations and also establish process and governance to really move something like that through. And we put this to the test with our first submission back in December of 2019, ultimately made its way through the House and the Senate, and then the president signed it into law by March 3rd. So, you know, it is possible, and I look forward to more of what the team's going to do on that front and really what the VA is going to do as it continues to help our veterans, and I'd call it support the entire nation in times of crises like this.
Thank you very much. And Mike, I'm going to ask you about what you see as some of the biggest concerns in the U.S. health system, and then what you see as a couple of the biggest answers to those issues. So give us a quick rundown, just a couple minute or two, on a couple of the biggest concerns in the U.S. healthcare system. Then we'll ask you what you see as some of the biggest solutions, the biggest game-changing proposals that would really change healthcare.
Thanks, Scott. So I think one of the biggest concerns, healthcare as it exists, a lot of people say it's broken. I look at it slightly differently. I think it's functioning as designed. It's designed to be complex, expensive, and inequitable. And for those deniers out there who may kind of speak against that, I think the COVID pandemic has really, brought a lot of things to light that are no longer deniable. So that aside, one of the biggest concerns that continues to frustrate me is just how much healthcare costs and how inexpensive it is right now. And one of my biggest concerns isn't just where it is today, but it's actually where it's projected to be in 10 years, right? So in 10 years, we're looking at a healthcare system in the U.S. that's going to be about $7 trillion, right? It's $3.7 trillion today. That's essentially a doubling of what we spend on healthcare. And I think those projections should be a great concern for anyone who cares about America's comparative advantage in producing anything, right? Unlike other costs, healthcare costs are borne by society, right? Either on the balance sheets of companies or directly by taxpayers. And even when you look at consumers, consumers continue to allocate more of their income to purchasing of care, right? And it just eliminates opportunities to spend on other goods and services in the U.S. economy. And so when you think about fundamentally what that means in the way I have, the way healthcare is trending from a cost and spending standpoint is fundamentally undermining, I think, America's opportunity to be a productive and growing society. And it's different from other problems in how care is delivered, but I think it's a fundamental problem because it impacts really the structure of the American economy.
And so take us through, Michael. What is, how do we fix that? Because you're absolutely right. We're at 20% at least of the American economy spent on healthcare. And for all that, we're great in some areas, not so great in other areas. There's big gaps in the system. What are some of the ways you actually solve this? What are some of the big things you could do to help improve American healthcare?
So big things mostly are going to be hard to come by. And I say that as someone who looks at how reforms have been attempted and implemented in the past. So I sort of come at this less as an idealist and more as a realist that understands what it actually takes to make a difference. So what we're talking about from a making a difference standpoint, especially when we focus on bending the cost curve, is figuring out who is essential to the delivery and consumption of care and health, and essentially building a table with those folks at the table first to figure out what's necessary to move us forward. In more practical terms, it does mean a simplification of how things are done. And
well, let me ask you a question, Michael.
Sure.
Let me start with this question. You said at the table should be those that are essential to healthcare and healthcare delivery in our country. So this, of course, is a loaded suggestion because those that aren't invited to the table will, of course, have an axe to grind and say, no, they're essential too. So who gets excluded from that table? Who's not invited to that table?
So I'll answer that from a different perspective. And the perspective is this. Healthcare, if you boil it down, is folks who are able to provide care. And that goes anything from physicians to medical device manufacturers to pharmaceutical companies, right? They provide the care that make people better, right? And then there are those who consume the care, right? So I'd say a table needs to start with those who deliver care and those who consume care, and then expanding the vision of care to include the things we know are not clinical but actually have a great impact on healthcare and healthcare outcomes. Beyond that, you then bring in the money, right? The sources of payment, the sources of capital that finance all of this care that's being consumed. And right now, it's employers, and I call it taxpayers because taxpayers pay the government, or taxpayers, we pay into the government, then the government pays for our healthcare. And so I want to look at it fundamentally that way and say, if you have those folks around the table, how do we get to a better place? And how do we build more from where we want it to be versus looking at where we are? And I think a good example is looking at the evolution that's happened in the transportation industry, right? If you think back to horse-drawn carriages, I'm sure there were a lot of folks at that time, before the transition was made to the combustion engine, that was like, how do I make these horses faster? How do I add more horses to go faster? When the answer was moving completely away from horses. And then if you think about where we are now with the electric car, I'm actually thinking, how do we go from horses, which is kind of where I think healthcare is right now, to the electric car, right? And that is not comfortable for a lot of folks because it is very disruptive. But if we're really going to bend the cost curve, we need to think that way, and we need to make some meaningful decisions. And one of those decisions, from my perspective, from a simplicity and cost-saving standpoint, without impacting care people receive, is actually looking at the Medicaid program as an opportunity, especially during this crisis, to turn it into a 100% federally funded program. As it stands, the federal government pays anywhere from 80 to 90% of the Medicaid spending. And that can easily go to 100%, have the states build out their public health infrastructure and focus on actually supporting local communities from a public health standpoint versus setting rules, regulations, and credentialing for the delivery of clinical care, right? If you have that bifurcation, if you allow the states to focus on that, and also, obviously, I think, take on a lot of the long-term services and supports, and just have the federal government, the way it runs Medicare, run Medicaid, simplifies a lot of things, takes a lot of the complexity and burden off of the providers, which in turn allows them to actually reduce a lot of the spending on administration and waste, honestly, that comes with having to navigate all the different rules that exist in all different states.
Having Medicare plus 50 different states who run it all in their different ways, plus what have you, leads to lots of inefficiency. But wouldn't the skeptics say, look, you'll take Medicare away from the states, and there's a whole bunch of people whose ox would be gored when you do that, so it'll be politically very challenging. But on top of it, the states won't give up the tax revenues that they get from it as quickly as they as the federal government. Federal government would have to raise taxes to do that, but the states would not give up the tax revenues as quickly. So aren't there a ton of people that would say, oh, my God, even though the idea is so fundamentally sound, we're going to end up in a spot where it just adds the taxing authority because taxes tend to never go down. What's your sense of that?
If we believe that administrative waste accounts for 30% of healthcare spending, I think that's where we pay for what needs to be paid for that's currently not covered. Now, I look at it differently, and I look at it as the federal government is already picking up a significant portion of the Medicaid tab. And so in as much as it goes from 70% or 80% to 100%, that growth is accounted for by the reduction in administrative waste when you consolidate the credentialing, the permissioning, the payments to just one entity, which is essentially CMS, right? And change their operations to just look at this as, you know, what it is. They're paying for another part of the population in the way that they're paying for Medicare. And they can run similar programs like Medicaid Advantage, and basically just going off of Medicare Advantage, right? You can essentially take an existing program, copy how it's run, and just apply it to the Medicaid population, allow the states to keep their tax revenue for Medicaid, and focus on building out a public health infrastructure. The math works from my perspective, but obviously there will be naysayers, and obviously a lot of the existing stakeholders like things the way they are, and that's really the fundamental issue with changing anything in healthcare, honestly. Right.
I mean, partly the state governments like the things they are because it's a huge amount of control over a big amount of economic spend that they have. Even though they may lose money on it, they don't want to get rid of it. I mean, even though it causes their state budgets lots of problems, they don't want to get rid of it. And on the federal level, when do you invite the payers to that table or don't you? I mean, you sort of mentioned that the people that pay for it, which are really us through the payers or us through the government. But, I mean, there is a lot of discussion about, you know, how do we simplify our payer system and, you know, do the payers have too much to say in this? And we know the payers kind of often do mint money, no offense to our payer community. How do we deal with that in your solutions?
So I think the payers may see the writing on the wall, which is why you see a lot of them acquiring provider groups, right? And so there's this evolution into payviders because the traditional function of just receiving financial resources and then building out a network and you're essentially a pass-through is not going to be sustainable in the long run. And that's why you see a lot of providers or a lot of payviders essentially, which are essentially payer providers coming into play. And so I think a payvider makes a ton of sense to be at that table. It's really hard to justify a provider that's not thinking beyond that intermediary role or function having a lot of value to add to that discussion. And that's just me being pretty blunt. If we want to think about this, it has to be thought about from the perspective of this is a table right now that's too big with too many chairs, and it needs to be smaller, and it needs to have the essential chairs around it. And that is the view from a health reform standpoint that's only going to move us away from this thing that's growing to about $7 trillion towards something that hopefully by 2030 we can keep at $5 trillion. And that would still probably be too much. But, you know, I'm looking at this. And these are suggestions. I have no sense right now that there's any political will to do what I'm describing. And so we'll just kind of wait and see. But, you know, it's unfortunate because most who are paying attention kind of see where all this is headed and recognize the limited impact the things that are currently proposed will have. And it's almost like we're wedded to this fate of economic destruction almost.
A very, very expensive health care and not really getting the results we want as an entire community. I mean, that's really true. Michael, let me ask you this final question. How do people reach you to consult with you, to talk with you? How do they visit with Michael Akinyele?
Sure. Thanks, Scott. So best way is to go to my website, which is www.themaximizergroup.com. And on there, you'll learn more about my work and have opportunities to reach out and connect on the work I'm doing with startups, the work I'm doing with investors, the work I'm doing with corporations. And it's really a focus at this point in my career on inventing the future of healthcare and working with those who are mission aligned to build a simpler, cheaper, and equitable healthcare system in the U.S.
Michael, I want to thank you for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast again. Big vision, big ideas. I hope some of them can be seen through because I think they are so fundamentally needed. So thank you so much for joining the Becker's Healthcare Podcast.
Thanks for having me.